Good morning, and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. In the spirit of today's service on building bridges across boundaries to honor our shared humanity and common values, please turn and greet your neighbors. If you'd like to know more about what it means to be a member of this fellowship, please see me after the service. For this chalice lighting, the words are from a minister who was here about a year ago, Jennifer Gray. We come together every week, bound not by a creed or a mutual desire to please one God or many gods, yet we are drawn together by a belief that how we are in the world, who we are together, matters. We light this chalice together in the knowledge that love, not fear, can change this world. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, and a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. Let us take a moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like to briefly share a joy or sorrow from your life, please raise your hand so the microphone can be brought to you.
Sabrina Boker. I had a little accident on Thursday morning. I was kind of dozing off at the wheel, and I accidentally sideswiped this gentleman here. So my car's going to be in the shop on Monday. But it's still drivable. It's just a little dent, nothing serious. But I'm going to see if I can get a sleep study, assuming they approve it. If not, I'll get through the civilian doctor. So everything's okay, though.
Jim Chantel. Well, it's a kind of a joy to be back. I've been gone for about a month, I realized. Was on a family vacation out in Estes Park, went hiking in Rocky Mountain National Park every day. So enjoyed the time with Karen and her family from Columbia, Missouri. And then I was back for a while, although not for a Sunday. And the last couple of weeks I've been out in the Olympic Peninsula of Washington, attending a music festival out there. So I had a chance to play some instruments, and I think some of that will become part of the musicale at the end of August. So good to be back.
Ann Marchin, and I'm sure I've told everybody at least three or four times, but I was at my mother's 100th birthday party on July 18th, and we had a wonderful time. She'd said last year when she turned 99 that she was going to drink a beer and smoke a cigarette on her birthday, but we wouldn't let her. So instead, she had her nails painted bright red, and she had her red shirt on, and we bought her a tiara, so we had a great time. Very glad to have her.
Hi, I'm a UU. My name is Lynn Bobbio. Hi, Pat. I see a lot of familiar faces. So after I don't know if you call it service here. My other UUs, we call them service. But anyways, please greet me and tell me who you are, because I may not recognize you. I may recognize your face, but names will be a little bit. It's been about 12 years. So anyways, it's really great to be back.
Many of you remember longtime member Gwen Gieselman, who recently fell and broke her ankle, but she's out of the hospital and out of rehab and then moving around her own place now with a big boot. So if you think about her, I have her address if anybody would like to send her a get well card.
Montemani, books for the book group will be in the Alsop room after service.
May we remember those who have spoken and be mindful of the many joys and sorrows we hold in silence in our hearts. Now please stand as you are able as we sing hymn number 318, We Would Be One. Now, will the children please come forward and join Destiny for a story?
I'm going to be reading a book called There's No Such Thing as a Dragon by Jack Kemp. Billy Bixby was rather surprised when he woke up one morning and had found a dragon in his room. It was a small dragon, about the size of a kitten. The dragon wagged its tail happily when Billy patted its head. Billy went downstairs to tell his mother. "There's no such thing as a dragon," said Billy's mother, and she said it like she meant it. Billy washed his face and hands and went down to breakfast. The dragon went along. It was bigger now, almost the size of a dog. Billy sat down at the table. The dragon sat down on the table. The sort of thing was not unusual permitted, but there wasn't much Billy's mother could do about it. She already had said, "There's no such thing as a dragon, and if there's no such thing, you can't tell it to get off the table." By the time Billy came back downstairs, the dragon had grown so much it filled the hall. Billy had to go around the way of the living room to get where his mother was. "I didn't know dragons grew so fast, said Billy. "There's no such thing as a dragon," said Billy, said Mother firmly. Cleaning the downstairs took Mother all morning, with the dragon in the way and having to climb in and out of windows to get room to room. When the dragon woke from his nap, he was hungry. A bakery truck went by. The smell of fresh bread was more than the dragon could resist. The dragon ran down the street after the bakery truck. The house went along a course, like the shell on a snail. The mailman was coming up the path with some mail for the Bixbys when their house rushed past him and headed down the street. He chased the Bixby's house for a few blocks, but he couldn't catch it. When Mr. Bixby came home for lunch, the first thing he noticed was that the house was gone. Luckily, one of the neighbors was able to tell him which way it went. Mr. Bixby climbed over the dragon's head onto the porch roof and through the upstairs window. "How did this happen?" Mr. Bixby asked. "It was the dragon," said Billy. "There's no such thing," Billy's mother started to say. "There is a dragon," Billy insisted, "a very big dragon." And Billy patted the dragon on its head. And the dragon wagged his tail happily. Then even faster than it had grown, the dragon started getting smaller. "I think he just wanted to be noticed," said Billy.
Now we will accept the offering. For this morning's service, we continue our Spectrum of Spirituality, a series of services exploring other religions by talking with members of those religions. Today, Laura Lott is interviewing Jane Waddington, a Unity minister. Jane is originally from Pennsylvania and moved to Missouri in 1975 to study at Unity Village. She was ordained in 1977. Jane has degrees in world religion and counseling. She's worked in many places across the United States and lived all over the world, including some time in India. And she's now back at the Unity Village near Lee's Summit, Missouri. So please welcome Laura and Jane.
Good morning. Hello, everybody.
So I'm Laura, for those of you that don't know. This is sort of nerve-wracking in this format. It is much nicer when you're just reading something that you've already written, and you can, like, do that, and that's cool. So... So good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so glad that you could come.
And I am, and I wanted to thank all of you for allowing Laura to invite me. And I feel very honored to be here. And just my preparing to come was a gift, because as I, you know, begin to think about what I'm going to share with you, I have to review my own belief system and go dig very deep and kind of do a life review for a few years. And I hope I'm the right one to talk with you this morning, because, well, if I'm not, it's too late now.
So I just had a couple questions written down. I thought I'd start with how would you explain unity to someone who doesn't know much about it?
Good question. unity began, I'm going to say, in the late 1800s with Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. And it was all a part of that wave of transcendental thinking, you know, and I think they met at a lecture, and ultimately, you know, they married, and they started something called Unity School of Practical Christianity. And they wanted to help people to take the teachings taught by Jesus and make them living every day in their life, put them in a practical use. And the idea was, if you can't put them into your everyday life, then put them on the shelf. You know, it's because it's not just, they were not into dogma. They bought a farm out in Missouri, and brought their staff out there every day on buses to work, and eventually a lot of them moved out there. And if you haven't been to Unity Village, I'm inviting you to come out and just take a look. You can walk around. It's beautiful. I mean, they've got ponds and they've got fountains, and I still go over there once in a while just to walk. Mm. And it's changed. I'm going to say it has changed, like every religion has changed over the years. In fact, they never wanted it to be a religion. They wanted it to be a movement of positive thought, mm-hmm. and of positive action. In fact, when I arrived in 75, there, from early spring until late fall, the place was just packed with people. They came for continuing education. They came for just to learn anything that Unity had to teach, because it was freeing. And I'll tell you, if I may, what attracted me to Unity, mm-hmm. first. You know, I was born and raised Catholic, so that was a very interesting educational process there. And then as I grew old enough to not be afraid to question, I remember going to the priest and asking some questions, and I was just told I was a heretic. Because, you know, how dare you question our theology and question, and you're not smart enough anyway to know what we know. And I thought, well, okay, heretic. Well, I started thinking about all the heretics I had read about, and I liked that company. So I went into my agnostic stage, where I still had a deep, deep faith, but I wasn't sure what I believed in, what it was supposed to be called. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, eventually I bumped into a man that I worked with, and he was a Quaker, and I lived in the Philadelphia area at the time, and Quakers abound there. And so I started going to the Quaker meeting house. The first time I went, there was a sign. It was a very stark room, actually, and there was one little sign on the front, and it said, "God is love." And I thought, this is the beginning of my new foundation. And so I began to go there, and eventually I married a Quaker man, and we have three children, and didn't last, but, you know, the children did. And anyway, I was searching, and I went to a conference one time, and the man I had been sitting next to in the back of the room was someone they called forth to give the benediction or the invocation, I can't remember. And he touched my heart, and he became my mentor. And he was a Unity minister.
Uh-huh.
And I only lived two blocks from the church and didn't know it. In fact, I only lived a few blocks from the Unity Fellowship, I mean the Unitarian Fellowship that was called Unity in Oak Park, Illinois. Frank Lloyd Wright built that one. And I started to work at the Unity Church as a counselor, and I kept the Unitarian number on my desk because every other day someone called thinking Unity was the Unity. It was your Unitarian, but it was called Unity Temple.
Which is interesting because, I mean, I grew up Unity, and so I think a lot of, from what I've heard from a lot of you, you've never heard of Unity, I think. Which is interesting being from Unity because when you say, you know, people ask you or you say Unity, they say, oh, Unitarian,
mm-hmm.
you know, or when you move to town, they're like, I thought you went to that church up there on the hill, you know,
yeah.
the Unitarian.
Yeah.
So it's funny how that, yeah.
So we have been mistaken for each other,
mm-hmm.
only in name,
yeah.
I think. Anyway, if I may get back to Charles Immortal, one of the things that that they really worked with was the Bible became the textbook, but it was not ever taken literally. It was interpreted metaphysically, and that is just it was a system of study that of the science of being, and that which transcends the physical. Goes beyond to understanding the realm of ideas and their legitimate expression. So it was a very mental, for a while, very mental movement. And I think it started because that way they were fascinated by that because when Charles Immortal met and they began to pray together and study together, they decided that the mind then could change things. And so Myrtle Fillmore had a very severe lung disease, and she was determined to heal it through the process of mental prayer, which she did. And that convinced her that this all worked, you know. Charles was born with one leg shorter than the other, and he thought he could also do that. And he did help it a bit, but it never did quite. He still walked with a limp. And so that's where it differed a lot, and I think that's why. Where was I going with this? The people that came, I think, were so happy. Where they were so joyful. And they came from all faiths, and from all over the country, and some from foreign countries to study there, because they it was a leap for them out of orthodoxy. You know, it gave them permission to think for themselves. It gave them permission to think that they were higher than worms of the dust, you know, that they were, in a sense, they were also divine beings. And that's a stretch, I know, for a lot of people. But when Unity first started, there were three major departments, and one was publishing, and one was education, and the other was prayer. And the prayer ministry exists today, and it's called Silent Unity. And there's someone there 24/7, so you can call in anytime and have someone pray with you. And the difference in the prayer is there is not a begging or a pleading. The prayer is what we call affirmative prayer. They speak a statement as though it were already finished. Like if if you were not feeling well or ill or something, we would not focus on the disease other than saying it has no power over you, and really just affirm your wholeness, your beauty, your the wholeness of spirit, mind, and body.
Which I'd like to discuss just a little bit more in reference to prayer, because I think there is a lot of prayer in unity. And I think when you say prayer to a group, it's at least as far as with my experience, it's a very different type of thing. Because like you were saying, it isn't like, you know, oh, please God, blah, 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 right? It's here, you know, universe, I'm putting out this, I'm affirming what already is, right?
Right.
Right.
The truth, the absolute truth of your being.
Right. And, yeah.
And that's a hard one. That was hard, too, because I, having been raised Catholic, and,
oh, sure.
and we prayed, you know, we just asked for anything we wanted. It was like we were talking to Santa Claus, you know, and just hoped it happened.
Right.
And but with unity, when they affirmative prayer, it's on you, you know. Can you accept the highest and best for yourself? And if I can, then I affirm that. And, for example, if someone called and said, pray for me, I'm going to surgery or something, the prayer could be something like, mighty currents of God's healing love flow through you now, making you whole, well, and free. And they might say that with power, you know, maybe three or four times, until the person just, thank you, you know, until you feel it. And so it's a very different form of praying. And yet as we are learning more with our quantum physics and everything else too, we're also learning about how the mind can control energy. And this is what it is a lot, I think. And, you know, it used to be called faith. Yes, I have faith that this is going to work. Well, now that science has proven, and it started, I think, with biofeedback and all of that. I think science and religion go hand in hand, in a sense, you know. And so anyway, that's the prayer part of it. And they're still praying, and it's probably the most powerful part they're doing, most powerful department right now, I think, at Unity Village. The publishing, they don't do the publishing there anymore. They send it out. And as far as the education, it's changed a lot. And because a lot of the books that are published by Charles Myrtle Fillmore and some of the old metaphysicians, the language was different. You know, 150 years ago, 100 years ago, the language was very different. And so the whole new generation coming in, they're wanting to reprint and rewrite them. And every time something is rewritten, I think there's something lost. You know, but it's all just changed tremendously. And
so that sort of leads into the two-part question of what does unity do well, and what areas maybe does it need some growth or some change?
The areas I think they have succeeded well in spreading the word of positive living. I mean, it went out, say, it started well over 100 years ago, and as more and more people came and learned that, and then we watched, you know, Oprah pick it up, and Maya Angelou, she studied unity as Oprah did, and all, and Joel Osteen now, he's out there. You know, they're all, now it's turned. There's been a wave of positive thinking and positive action that, and it's not just all from unity, because I think it was a really beautiful wave of consciousness that was happening at that time, and it was time for humanity to pick it up and not to be continued to be beaten down by religion and thinking that they were had to follow someone else's rules and regulations. And I think that unity helped greatly in helping what happened to me, the first Unity service I went to, I cried through the whole thing because I heard things being spoken, words being spoken that I had held in my heart for many, many years, thinking I was crazy. And I must be the only one thinking this. How arrogant now I think about it. You know, but it was, and then we sang the peace song, and we sang a few other songs, and you know, I just cried because I know, and I knew then that something wonderful was happening and that I was in my right place. And so I think that's one of the things that Unity did, was help to spread the positive outlook on life for the individual and for groups. And the next one was, where do we go wrong?
So the flip side, yeah. Well, we can phrase it differently.
Well, I think change happens. Mm-hmm. And I think that what is happening now is it's going the way of the world. Mm-hmm. It was different. Unity was a very different, unique movement. And at that time, there was nothing else kind of like that, mm-hmm. you know. And but then new people took over, and they became a little embarrassed because we were not mainstream enough. And so I think the teachings themselves started to be diluted. And don't quote me. Don't put my name on this tape. But I think that's what happened. You know, it happens a lot. And I think when an individual is unique and people start buzzing and, oh, you don't fit in this group, you don't fit in that. We were just like orphans, you know, when it came to theological schools, or, you know, we never called ourselves that. Now it's building up to that now. And it's not the same unity that attracted me. Mm-hmm. And so today, I can't tell you exactly what they're teaching in the ministerial program or the seminary or any of it. I think they're teaching good things,
right?
But it's not the original teachings. And, you know, I have to assume that there is a great intelligence somewhere that brings lessons in and brings a wave of consciousness in that people can... they need for the times that are coming. And on the other hand, then I know that also that it's because of our thinking that we have created the times that are coming.
Yeah.
So I don't know what we're doing wrong. I mean, all of that we're doing wrong, but I do know it's become a bit corporate instead of ministerial, mm-hmm. instead of, I think.
Mm-hmm. That would be frustrating.
Yes, it is frustrating. And I wanted to share with you, too, if I can. I mm-hmm. think we still have time. But some of the basic principles that Unity teaches. And one of the things, we have about five that we've boiled down. And the first one is that there is one presence and one power active in my life, and that's I still hear that being affirmed. And some people add God, the good. Well, to me, God means good, you know. And some people just say God, you know. There's one presence and one power in the world in life, and then people right away say, well, what about evil, mm-hmm. you know? And so there's a whole dissertation on that in one of Charles Fillmore's books. And it's not that people are evil, they can do evil things. So in the truth of your being is goodness and love and light and all those qualities. And so there is, they believe in one presence and one power. And that is debatable beyond, anyway. Number two was the individualized divinity. They believe with all their hearts, and as I do believe this, that there is at least a spark of the divine in you, in everything that is created. And we, and they quote in the from the Bible, St. Paul saying, you know, it's Christ in you, your hope of glory. Now, in unity, they have different, they don't mean Christ as, it's not Jesus' last name. You know, they say that Jesus is a symbolic of the aware man, the aware human, the one that begins to think and to know and to move to achieve a higher sense of his or her being. And they would reach a state of Christhood. Christhood would mean a conscious union, the oneness with Creator. And we also have different names for God, you know. We could probably brainstorm, and we did that one time not too long ago and came up with about 20 names. And one would be that they like God, Creator, Source, Divine Intelligence, Energy. You know, so there are ways, many ways to look at God and to find a name that suits suits your heart. Mm-hmm. And so, and also... one of the principles is something called the law of mind action. We alluded to this a little before, but it would be the universal law of what you hold in your mind, you will attract to you. And, or as a man thinketh, or a woman thinketh in her mind, she becomes. And so, and they go back also to that which Jesus taught, where two or more are together with one intention, so to speak. I'm a little paraphrasing. That there is the divine, or you could even say the universe, working to bring about all of that energy to manifest it. So we see prayer more like in a scientific way, but the mind... We see the mind can move energy. And I think they're finding that out, too, in some of the labs where they're wanting, they thought they want the particles to do a certain thing, and it will, because it's reading their mind. There's an energy between people. There's a chemistry or an energy between people. I believe we live in a field. You know, they call it the, you know, it's a field of energy. What this is not just air, this is just all pure energy. And if we could see it, if we could just move our hand across and could see with another vision, we'd see sparks flying all the time. Not just when we're having an argument, you know, or something. But it's there all the time waiting to be formed through mind. And so that's why it's so important to hold peaceful thoughts. It's the idea of, you know, if you plant carrot seeds in the ground, you get carrots. If we plant seeds of hatred here, we're going to get that in return. And we're all working now with seeds of oneness and seeds of love and peace, because if the world ever needed it, it's now, because we've built this crisis up, you know, that we can change it. It's going to take all of us to, you know, to change the way we think about it. And then there's the, how do we achieve all of this and become really comfortable with this and clear with it is through prayer and meditation. Mm-hmm. And we've already talked about prayer and the affirmative prayer. And I know a lot of you maybe meditate already, or take yoga classes, or find time to walk in the woods, or, you know, to feel that oneness with nature, to feel the oneness with Creator, to feel the oneness with each other. It's very, it can be subtle and it can be so powerful, but it's real. And I firmly believe there's only one here.
One what?
One life, one love, one breath, all in all these beautiful forms. Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, I let my mind just go wild anymore. I don't listen to anybody's dogma but my own. And in fact, I'm not even about unity even. You know, but I know this is what they taught what attracted me to it.
So as in, like, that we're all part of the same exact thing, that we're all one.
And different. We're absolutely the same but different. And thank God for the difference, you know. But it's that same, it's like, it's one of the things I learned in India, or I was brought into a greater awareness of in India, where I can look at you and say, you are divinity, mm-hmm. experiencing and expressing itself as Laura. Mm-hmm. And that's how I am looking at people today, that you are divinity. You're not just bone and sinew and, you know, your divinity. Because we all come from, if you want to call it the Big Bang Theory, we all come from stars. We all come from the same place. Mm-hmm. The divine idea, the original divine idea of life. And so, and I can look at a tree now, too, and I can say, you are divinity experiencing and expressing itself as tree. Now, that sounds crazy to a lot of people I know, but what else is there? I mean, I've tried the worm of the dust thing. It didn't work. I've tried all those other things. I believed whatever they told me I was to be. I believed other people's dogmas, other religions, other ideas, and I just had to let go of all of that. And because within us is all we need.
And would you say, isn't that sort of a key unity concept, that within us is all that we need, and letting go of everything else? Isn't that sort of the goal?
That, yes, at least it used to be. Yeah, it is, and it probably still is. That we let go of things that are not
beneficial
to the growth of your soul, mm-hmm. or your spirit or your family, or, you know, and we know what that is. Mm-hmm. We know what they are. We don't have to have anybody tell us. We know when we feel disgust towards something or hatred towards mm-hmm. a group of people. We know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. It's just poison in us. And I believe that on some other level, it's a poison dart to them. Mm-hmm. And we have a responsibility, once we know or begin to know who we are, to rise to that, rise to that level of thinking, of behavior, to that deep, deep level of love that mm-hmm. we are. I think we're pure love personified. And, you know, we're not the only ones thinking this way, because when I went to India, I did go to an ashram, believe it or not, because I told my coworker, I said, you know, there's more to life than this. You know, this is hard work, constantly, you know, scrubbing out my thoughts, and you know, and it's worth it. I'm feeling better about myself, but there's more. Where are all the happy people in unity if this is all so true? How come they're not just overwhelmed with joy? And I said, I want the best teacher in the world. I don't know what else to do. I want the next step. And you have to watch what you say in a very affirmative way, because you'll get it. And I ended up in 6 months, I was in India, but I was telling how my first trip to India, I woke up after having a dream, and I heard this voice. It was like a deep voice said, you're coming to India. And I sat up in bed, and I said, oh, yeah? Well, then you're going to have to get me a ticket. And within 3 days, someone had handed me money for the ticket to India, and they didn't know anything about that. And so I thought, oh, rats, I have to go to India now, you know? So, but that was, it was the start of a whole new life for me. And when I was there, I remember saying something to the teacher, and he looked at me. He was actually speaking to a woman from Germany, because there were thousands of people there all the time from every country, every religion, every political background, every language, and we all worked together. We sang together. We prayed, meditated together. We sang songs of praise to life and using every name of God, you know, creator, whatever, and worked together. And we learned from each other. And we, we realized that we could be together in love and peace and prosperity and not fight. It was that's the way it was. But when I was sitting in a meeting with the teacher and this woman who couldn't hear very well, and she was from Germany, and she said, she kept asking questions, or he would say something, and she'd lean over to me, and she'd say, "What? What did he say?" So I'd have to yell in her ear, you know. So she said, he asked her a question, and she said, "What?" And I told her, and she said, I know the answer. It's unity." But before she said that, he looked at me like, "Listen." And he said, "Not unity, union." He was just saying, take it another step. You know, we know that we are one, but take it another step to know that we are one. Hmm. And I loved that, you're singing that this morning. It was perfect. And so I think Unity knows that. I'm going to say a lot of Unity ministers are still teaching the original teachings and have brought it up to date themselves. And there are a lot that are rephrasing things. So I still see a lot of truth in there. It's the thing I think that disturbs me is that it's gone, the business aspect of it. I mean, it used to be a ministry with a business aspect. We know all, you know, and now I think it's a business with a ministerial aspect. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And then I guess the last, and meditation, you know, I'm not going to get into that because you can all do that. It's everywhere now. It's wonderful. It's a time to get to know who your real self, you know, our high self. And then I believe in service. And I think the quickest way to feel oneness with Creator, with everyone else, is in service to humanity. So, do you have another question?
I just have two more.
Okay.
Okay. So the first one, which I have some thoughts on, and we kind of covered, is the differences between UU and Unity, and similarities also. So I would just say that the similarities that I feel there are is the fact that they're both two religions that are not religions, that are categorized, that are not categorized, that are difficult to explain, that when someone says, "What is?" and you're like, and so I think people think...
That's it, you've got
Yeah,
it.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any thoughts on that, or is that pretty much summed
up? I think you're right on there. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to explain, except now Unity's starting to get more mainstream, so they can be
explained.
Defined. And how can you define spirit? How can you define energy, you know, a handful of energy? How can you define something that is so mystical? And I think that's where we're going, into the more mystical aspects of life, that really it's a personal experience. Mm. And the more you try to define something, the more it isn't, the more diluted it becomes.
Which I would say is probably the key thing that's the similarity between the two concepts, is that they're both completely a unique and individual religion. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody sitting in this room has a different thought and belief than everyone else, and I think it's the same, at least in my experience with the
Unity. And I think it's good to have all these different viewpoints, because it still adds to the one mind, you know, the field of consciousness, and so that it's a faster way to learn. You learn how to think and to grab what you're thinking and what your idea is, and it's not a sin, you know. And Unity does not believe in sin. It just they say error thinking, or you miss the mark. Yeah, do it again. Try it again. But, you know, in Catholicism, I mean, it was fear. And I used to think that God was an old man, you know, sitting up on a cloud with a book on his lap and a thunderbolt in one. And then as every step I took, it became friendlier and more loving and kinder. And now I can look at anybody and anything and see that it's divinity. I didn't say it was all God. It was all divine, you know, the one and only. But it's divinity. You know, we're more than we think. So what other question?
Well, I think, I mean, you've answered some of this, but maybe I'll put it out there in case there's something specific. You know, how do you think that unity impacts your life? Which is sort of like encompasses everything you've said, but is there something?
I think it was a major stepping stone in my life, mm-hmm. and I think it saved my life. And I think when I first came into it, it was exactly what I needed at that mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. And even though it's changed, I think there will be new people coming into Unity, it'll be exactly what they need at that time. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's something very, I want to use words like holy and sacred that guide us and guard, and it's part of us, it's part of who we are. Mm-hmm. But it's guiding us to the right time and the right place and the right people. And so I feel guilty when I talk a little negative about it, but I also praise it and love it, and it helped me to get to my next step. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure this, because we can't stop, there's more, always more. Mm-hmm. There are a gazillion worlds to be explored and levels of thought and consciousness and love. So.
Okay, may I just share one more thing before where the hook comes out? This is one thing that I just wanted to share this. I got, somebody handed this to me when I was in India. It said, after long searches here and there, in temples and in churches, in earths and in heavens, at last you come back, completing the circle from where you started to your own soul. And you find that it, for whom you have been seeking all over the world, for whom you have been weeping and praying in churches and temples, on whom you were looking as the mystery of all mysteries, shrouded in clouds, is the nearest of the near, is your own high self, the reality of your life, body, and soul. This is your own nature. Assert it, manifest it. Truth and truth alone is one's real friend and relative. Abide by truth. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you both. So at this time, we'll open the floor to questions and comments. Please raise your hand, and Laura will bring the microphone to you.
I just looked up just now, so I'm going to go this way.
Hi, my name is Sonia, and I want to say thank you for sharing your experience and your stories. It really, I'm just beginning a standing of new life, because I had so many questions. I was so lost for so long. By me coming here, every time I come here, it just makes more sense. Makes more sense. It makes me hungry to come over here again every Sunday. I try my best to come over here. But I want to say thank you for sharing, and that was wonderful.
Thank you, Sonia. You found your right place.
You just alluded to this a little bit in your talk, but how does Unity, or maybe how do you deal with this good, this mind, this? How do you square that with kids dying of Ebola? I mean, this doesn't look real good. Or,
yeah, it's very, very difficult to watch, and it's frustrating to think that we can't do something right away. But some of it, you know, we're not there yet. You know, we have not been able to reach the whole world. There is still a lot of the world that lives in ignorance right here in the United States, some of us, you know. And I don't know how to deal with it other than sometimes I cry and I pray and I see them as radiant angels or teachers for us, for humanity, to do something and get our act together. Thank you.
And I would just add that for me, you know, I think a lot of my life people have considered me to be naive because of my insistent that everything is positive, right? And refusal to accept anything that's negative. But I view that as action, and that by refusing to give energy to that negativity and that negative situation, I am impacting it, and I can bring and grow the positive.
My name is Bob. First off, thank you for coming out here. It was an excellent presentation. I have two questions. One is sort of silly, and the other is a little bit more serious, and you can decide which is which. The first one was, you know, there are origins of Mormonism related to Kansas City, and now Unity as well. Is there something about the water in Jackson County that we need to know about?
Is there something in the water, did you say?
Yeah.
I think so.
And the other question is about prayer and meditation. Would I be entirely off base to think that... Oh, here, let me propose two different theses. In Unity, prayer and meditation are part of the same process, or in Unity, they are very different processes?
I'd say they're, yes, they're the same and different. No, prayer is a different, their prayer is an affirmative visualization and verbalization of what they believe to be the truth of your being. Meditation is a time to relax and go deep within oneself, to acquaint oneself with the love that is waiting there for us, and also to get acquainted with our high self, our divine self. It's how we get to know that more intimately. And it's a different process. It's a process of silence, of being quiet. And some people can't sit still, and some people can't. Some people use a mantra, you know, or some people, and a mantra can just be peace, a word, one word, peace, you know, and keep until it takes you into a deep place. It's, with some people, it's just taking a walk in the forest or taking a walk or sitting, you know, holding your grandchild, you know, it can be a deep spiritual experience. So it can happen differently, but it is a different process. It's a time of being quiet and listening. Because when we have all truth within us, we have to be quiet to hear it. Thank you. That's a good question. Both of them were.
Jim Chanteau. My mother, Helen Chanteau, was a lifelong Unity advocate, and in the 1920s traveled to Unity Village from California. She came here to Manhattan after my father died in 2008, and many of you may remember my mother came to Unitarian, and I asked her several times about how she reconciled that with her lifelong advocacy of Unity, and she said in her mind there were just two different ways of talking about the same thing. Now, that comes full circle. When she died in 2012, it was left to my brother and I to put her service together here in Manhattan. I contacted both the Unity minister here and the Unity minister where she had lived out in Phoenix, Arizona, who gave me some readings that we could include in the service and in the printed material we handed out. I also contacted Michael Nelson, who's our minister here. What was interesting is I got three recommendations for the same reading, which was by a Unity minister. Our minister recommended that reading, not knowing it had been written by a Unity minister. And there were so many, I can't say it's the same, they're parallels is the way I would put it. But in hearing the comments today, I'm thinking, you know, there are two sides to Unitarians. We are Unitarian Universalists. The other side is Universalism, which we don't mention as much. But universal is this notion that everyone, if anyone is saved, everyone is saved. If anyone is to benefit, we all benefit. And I think that's very similar to what I hear from Unity. So the universalism side of this denomination is probably the closest place to Unity that I know of. By the way, I do agree that the Unity Village in Lee's Summit is a magnificent place. I've been there several times.
Come back again. Bring your friends and family. It is pretty, very pretty.
I'm Bea Lanning. I do attend the Unity group in Manhattan some of the time and in Kansas City because I do like the very positive approach. I come here for a lot of the things that are inspiring to me in art, literature, and nature. And I also am part of the community at Keats where I attend the Methodist Church. I dearly love those people. Not that I agree with everything that the Methodist Church has. But anyway, I take what is available where I find it. I'm very thankful for much in Unity. But now, Laura, I just wanted to say to you, you've expanded your world beyond Unity. Can you just say a couple comments on that one?
what do you mean?
You obviously started out in Unity. Now you are in a large world.
Well, let's see. Was raised in Unity. My grandmother was Unity, and she raised all of her kids in Unity, and so I'm like a third generation. So all those teachings just are a part of who I am. I don't know any other way to view it, which I'm grateful for because it comes naturally. And I did attend the Unity Church here. When you said that when you first attended, you cried through the service, that sort of spoke to me because I was with my first husband, Clayton, and it was Easter, and we were coming down, and I went, he didn't, and I went for the first time here in Manhattan to Unity, and I just cried. I just couldn't not cry. I don't know. And I just felt like, you know, and that's like the moment things sort of started to shift for me. And then I, you know, have been on this journey for however many years now. And I don't know if it's Unity in general or just this particular community of Unity here in Manhattan. I just wanted a community. And we do a really good job of that, you know, and
yes,
I love that. So does that answer your question?
That is a no.
Okay.
This is fabulous community support.
Thank you. I really enjoyed your presentation. But also one thing that really resonated with me was when you talked about the change of the tone of the church as it is at this time, because I really see that happening in, you know, throughout history and all, you know, we just swing, our pendulum swings. And like when I was a kid, I was raised Catholic, and I was raised up with Pope John the 23rd. Man, I mean, talk about a rebel who just changed everything. And then we went into this little thing where now the American Catholic Church is extremely conservative. I went to a mass with for my aunt and basically had a tea party sermon, and which was really shocking. And now we have Pope Francis coming on, so who's just tossing everything up in the air again. So I just, I think, you know, you talked about your colleagues, the fellow ministers who wanted to see a shift, and I just, mm-hmm. I think definitely with that kind of push that yeah. it'll happen. And yeah. But it's I see that happening in all religions. Everywhere. That it just swinged like that. Right. So, yeah. But thanks again.
In church and politics and everything, you know, it just doesn't stay the same. Thank goodness. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I appreciated the way you explained why it was that you cried through your entire first service at Unity, and I thought I'd say something because you had the same experience, because so did I. I mean, what is it about? but because of that, I didn't go back. It was too much. I preferred yeah. to keep a little more cerebral. Maybe I'm a coward, a spiritual coward. Yeah. But are you familiar with Mike Dooley? Is he part of that same Unity outgrowth? Not familiar with them?
Mm-mm.
Okay. He's sort of a commercial guru of thoughts become things. And you can sign up for a free email called Notes mm-hmm. from the Universe every yeah. day. And it's just a reminder of that positive thinking and in oftentimes a very lighthearted way. So
Right.
Yeah.
And I understand why, you know, you didn't want to go back, because it's shocking sometimes. I was shocked when I first cried, because I thought, you know, it touched a place in my heart, touched a place of love that I knew was there, but I had not really experienced, and that it brought it out, and I was free. But a lot of people are shyer, you know. If that had happened 20 years before it happened, I probably would have run like for the hills. So,
thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
One more. Hi. I'm Anna Franklin, and I teach yoga here in town, and the yoga philosophy teaches us that there are, this is not religion actually, but it is maybe connected, it's very ancient, very 5,000 years old, mm-hmm. Teaches us there are five levels to the human system, mm-hmm. The emotional, the mental, let me see, anamaya, pranamaya, the emotional, the energetic, the intellectual, mm-hmm. sorry, the physical, the physical, the energetic, the intellectual, the emotional, and at the center, the deepest level, is the level of bliss or divinity. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about crying and not understanding why you're crying, you're on the level, you're right on the verge of connecting with that central part of you.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say one more thing about the peace song. So we're going to sing the peace song, which Drew will say in a second. I just want to say that this is my favorite part of Unity, and that growing up in Unity, our church was pretty small, and I was usually one of the only kids, and so if there wasn't someone volunteering to teach me that day, I would crawl back and forth underneath the pews the entire service, and then we'd sing the peace song where everyone holds hands, and then I just remember the peace song and being swung. I'd always pick up my feet, and whoever was holding me would just swing me, you know, so I really like this song.
You're not expecting that today, are you? Okay.
So this song isn't in our hymnal. The words are in the order of service. We're going to go through the song twice, so people that know it already, feel free to sing it really loud the first time, and then hopefully you can pick up some of the tune and everybody join in as you feel comfortable the second time through. We have a calling in this world. We are called to honor diversity, to respect differences with dignity, and to challenge those who would forbid it. We are people of a wide path. Let us be wide in affection and go our way in peace. Amen. Everyone is welcome to join us for coffee and conversation in the narthex.